Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech-language pathologist.
And I'm Kate Hensler, developmental interventionist with the First Steps program in Louisville, Kentucky. Nice to have you back in town, Miss Laura. You've been busy.
I know. I had a great week in Missouri. We had three wonderful days in Springfield, in Independence, which is right outside Kansas City, and then a great, great, great day in Columbia on Friday, and I cannot wait to go back to that state. It was totally fun, and they are totally my kind of therapist, and so we just had a great week there. But, boy, is it good to be home. I really have enjoyed coming home. Our kids were with us the first part of the week, but not the second part of the week, and I'm not ever away from them that much, even though they're pretty darn grown. But it was fun to come back home and sleep in my own bed and all of that. So I'm glad about all that. Before we get started with today's show, though, I do want to talk about upcoming dates that I'm thrilled about. And I wish I had the calendar in front of me because I'm scared I'm not going to be able to do it from memory. This next week I'll be in Cincinnati on Thursday and then in Columbus, and that's Ohio, then Columbus, Ohio the following Thursday. And then the new dates to announce are Pittsburgh on Wednesday, November 17th, and then Edison, New Jersey on the 18th. So for all my East Coast friends, I hope you'll come join me those days. And I've gotten lots of requests or comments or things on the Facebook page at teachmetotalk.com, the Facebook page about that, about coming to the Northeast. So I'm so excited. Those days are actually going to work out, and I don't think I'd even gotten to tell you about those yet, Kate. So I'm very excited about those days.
Yeah, that's a totally different part of the country. That'll be neat. Interesting to see the difference in approaches and philosophies and personalities, should there be any.
I know. So I'm excited about that. All right, our first question for today is from a mom named, let's see, I'm just going to call her, she is a physician, so we're just going to call her Dr. V. And hang on one second, and I'm going to be able to read her email when I get it pulled up here. Oh, I hate it when I have technical problems.
We could not quite decide how to pronounce her name, so Laura decided to play it safe and go with Dr.
Yeah. Dr. V, yeah, she has what I'm sure is a lovely Indian name, but for fear of mispronouncing it and just totally butchering it, we're just going to go with Dr. V. She says, I'm the mother of three boys, a five-year-old and twins, 28 months old. I'm also a doctor by profession, hence why we've renamed her. I came across your website about 3 weeks ago, and I want to tell you that you have a website full of fantastic, user-friendly, practical information, and that, too, for free. I must confess that the website can be deceptive at first in that it's hard to imagine and appreciate just how much information you actually have on there. And then she gives me an idea for how I could organize that. So I think that's pretty cute. I'm always needing organizational advice. Really, though, for anybody that's listening and thinking about that, we have overhauled the site a couple of different times, and every time we do, we think it's going to be the answer to getting all the information in a more user-friendly format. And unless we just did a total rebuild from the ground up, I'm thinking this might be the best we could do. So my best advice to moms is if you're new to the website, and if, again, that's at teachmetotalk.com, just click on one of the categories at the top, whatever category you're interested in, and then it's in the yellow category line, and then scroll down to the very bottom where it says read older entries. Keep hitting that until you get back to the beginning in January 2008, and then read forward, because that's going to be the best way to do it. And again, when we redid the site last November or December, we tried to make that happen, but our web person was not able to successfully convert it that way. And so, again, sorry about that. I do wish there was something better I could do, but I'm not sure that's even practical at this point. But anyway,
it is kind of
hard
sometimes to know how much is on. I mean, you don't realize when you start those older things. And a lot of times those older things are the more basic kind of introductory things that you wrote early on. And the newer stuff is a little bit more kind of specific information. So, yeah. But obviously she figured it out, so you got
she
there.
She did. Yeah. And I'm happy about that. But and right now, if you go to the website, it looks a little bit deceptive because it's just got all the conference dates and things like that. And all the how-to articles, again, are at the back when I was spent all day and night. Every moment I wasn't mothering my own children or seeing clients, I was typing and writing and spent pretty much that whole year doing that. So there are tons and tons and tons of articles, not just with information, but really practical how-to things at home, kind of a mommy therapy directory. So please, if you're looking for information, don't give up just on that first page or two. Click back, 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 and that's kind of a pain. But again, sorry, that's just the best I can do. But she goes on to say, but once you've started reading, it's impossible to stop. I've printed out many articles and refer to them quite often. I've also started listening to your podcast. I'm very motivated and inspired to learn and implement your strategies. I can really understand why children and parents alike love you. Oh, that's so sweet. Then she says, I've been at home for the last 3 years, but I've been in survival mode for so long, trying to cope with 3 kids under 5, and I can imagine how that might feel to a mom. She says, I feel like I've neglected their speech, and this continues to be a great source of guilt for me. My twins are now 28 months old. They were born full term and have no other medical issues. I've been concerned about their speech from about 15 to 18 months onward. My eldest son was much more vocal and started speaking in phrases by 21 months old. He's also quite ahead in terms of reading, writing, and math compared to other kids in his kindergarten class. We are also bilingual, by the way. Everyone, my parents, mother-in-law, and even my husband, who's also a doctor, told me not to worry and that it's because I'm comparing them to my oldest, because they are boys, because they're twins, et cetera, et cetera. Even though I had a nagging feeling that this wasn't the reason or the excuse, I gave in and went along with my denial. It wasn't until I saw my GP when they were 25 months that he recommended a hearing test, and to my shock, they both had bilateral glue ear, but passed their hearing test. They had grommets put in August, and I did not look that up, but I'm assuming.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah, tubes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They must call them grommets in Australia. Interesting.
They must. They must. And so, I meant to look that up. I've never heard that term before, but.
Well, you know what a grommet is, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's like a little tube that they insert. So
yeah.
I'm going with tube.
So stand to reason that that would be it, yeah. Okay, and then she says, we also saw our private speech pathologist in August. I've seen her twice in her August after our initial assessment for 30 minutes each time. Her assessment in August when they were 26 months was, and this is how they scored, 21 months for receptive and expressive language for one twin, so about a 5-month delay for one, and then 21 months receptive and 18 months expressive for the other twin. While I'm sure she's great at her job, ... I am so grateful for your website and the direction and advice it provides. So she's trying to be really diplomatic there. And then she moves on to talk about what they're working on in therapy, Kate. And I think this is what we can help her with, giving her some additional ideas. She said, both of them know lots of nouns, and I was given some flashcards by my SLP to teach them verbs. And she says, by the way, her website is kidslanguageresources.com. I haven't looked that up anyway.
Wait, is that her speech therapist website?
It sounds like it's her speech therapist website, and again, I will have to look it up. And she says, they are making progress slowly, and I'm getting 1 or 2 word phrases from them, example, more song. They also now know some verbs and use them occasionally. Even though they know I am mommy in photos, they don't call me. They love their animals almost to the point of obsession. They've always loved nursery rhymes and go around the house singing. They also know their numbers. I know that this doesn't really help them in their daily lives. Oh, she must have listened to the show before. And I'm trying to take the focus off these and into more practical things. I've also decided to focus on English alone for now. Their receptive skills seem reasonable to me. She says, I'm finding it hard to target activities for both of them at the same time and find often that the one will wander off, and it seems to be the one who's most behind. I don't have anyone else to help me with them either. My husband is still in denial mode and gets home quite late anyway. I heard your podcast about the SLP with twins and just wondered if you had any other specific advice for twins, any articles or podcasts that I may have missed. And then she says, sweet, she says, I know that you're really busy right now, but thank you for reading this email. And then she had ordered the DVDs, and because she lives in Australia, sometimes Google Checkout will not allow international orders, and it just stopped doing that gosh, probably a year ago maybe. We had sold internationally for a long time, and then all of a sudden it stopped processing those. And so when an international order comes in, if it gets rejected, we don't even know that unless the parents email me and say, what else can I do? So I had to kind of email with his mom back and forth and back and forth about how to work out how to order it. And she sent a money order, blah, 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 blah. But basically she's saying, like I said, I can't wait for your DVDs. I'm truly inspired to try to implement your strategies. I hope to email you in a few months' time to tell you that my twins are talking beautifully nonstop. And then she says, thank you so much for all you do. Regards. So that was such a nice letter for us to hear since she's a podcast listener. But there are some things that I think that we can talk about with her, although she does seem to be on the right track with so many of the things that she's doing. Let's back up and kind of talk about the twins for a second. I think it's so hard for moms to parent those multiples, especially when they already have other children. Don't you think, Kay? Don't you see moms struggle with that all the time?
Absolutely. I mean, I think even with the second child, I know I had some guilt, you know, when my kids were very young, thinking I paid much more attention to my firstborn than I did to my second, and that was only one child. So I can't imagine two-year-olds and then the older child, and the older child's used to being a singleton and getting lots of attention, and they tend to be children who demand that sometimes because they've had it and they are used to getting it. So, no, I can't even imagine. I thought doing two a couple years apart was pretty hard, and I can't imagine doing three a couple years apart. So
I can't either. And at that, again, I think that whole guilt piece, and I tell moms this all the time, and if I were talking with her, I would say, you have just got to let that go because there is nothing that you can do about the past. Usually when children have developmental delays like this, it usually is more related to another factor besides what you did or didn't do. And that's not to say that environments aren't important, because they are, but that is never the only reason that a child has a language delay, in my professional opinion. And the reason that I say that, and Kate, I know that you agree with this because you still see lots of kids kind of in these situations where the environment's terrible. There might be, you know, a lower socioeconomic status, you know, checked out mom, checked out dad. There could, you know, even be other issues going on, and we might be there to see a two-year-old who's not doing great, yet the sibling who is 12 or 14 or 18 months old is doing super. They have totally normal skills, totally skills within the, you know, within that kind of typical realm of development. When we're working with the older kid, the baby's popping out the words that we're modeling. And again, same environment, same set of parents. And even when it's yucky, a lot of kids who kind of came into this world with and were put together, I don't want to say better, but had more of kind of what we would want to say neurological maturity. They didn't have any challenges such as being multiples or born earlier. A lot of those things that we see with twins, they just come into the world wired to learn language, and language does not seem to be hard for them at all, and they are doing super, yet we are in the same yucky environment seeing an older child who's struggling. So environment in and of itself is usually not the only reason that children are delayed. And again, I'm not talking about like severe environmental deprivation or an orphanage or anything like that. But don't you agree with that, Kate, that it's not just usually the environment that the reason that the child is delayed, unless it's truly horrendous? And I doubt that in this situation anyway, because the mom and dad are both highly educated, and they have this older son who is doing beautifully. So obviously they know how to talk to their child and parent their child and all that. And so I don't think she should blame herself for this language delay that these little boys have.
Right. I'd probably go a step further, Laura, and say rarely is it really just the environment. So, yeah, my guess is her idea of neglectful in the language department would look pretty darn good compared to a lot of environments, you know. And I'm not comparing her to the lower end. I'm just, you know, I feel certain that although she may not have had the time she would have liked to devote to it, that just her normal interaction with her children and her use of words and language and her, I mean, because, you know, she's obviously highly educated, and I trust that she's, you know, done her honest best to do what they needed, but there are kids in great environments who sometimes have language delays, and it's not, you know, and we've talked about this in the past as well. It does seem like the most dedicated, driven, devoted mothers are those who really internalize the guilt and feel responsible that they didn't do something else, something better, something, and, you know, it's like, nope, what you did usually works. You know, it worked on her first child, and it's more likely that, like you said, there's something going on with the twins that, and it doesn't sound like their issues are huge based on those scores, but they're not keeping pace with their older brother, and they're not keeping pace with what she would like to have them do. So, but it's probably something with the twins.
I think so, too. And the ears probably, you know, that plays a huge factor. When children can't hear consistently, of course they're not going to learn language in a typical way, and they also have some difficulty understanding language. It's not just about their talking. They have some receptive language delays as well, too. And again, I think that speaks to the point of having some difficulty learning to understand and process words because of those yucky ears. But she's gotten on that, and certainly yucky ears aren't her fault, even though she said she was surprised by that. When children don't have really symptomatic ear infections, you often don't know that they're having difficulty with those ears. And again, I guess that they may not do well. They even passed their hearing test. So even though they had the term glue ear, they still were hearing well enough to score above that 20 or 25 decibel level to get a pass on the hearing test. So she shouldn't even feel guilty about that. I think, too, when there's even kind of a loosely related medical issue and you happen to have the initials MD after your name, you probably feel a little bit guilty about that. How did I not know? Well, if there's no symptom, how would you know unless you were following them around?
Unless you're an EMT in school and using your otoscope on your own kids, then I guess you would know. But
she
was probably trying to, I don't know, feed them and change diapers, I'm guessing.
Yeah, she said she was just in survival mode, and I certainly understand that. And so I would just, my first advice to her would be just let that guilt go. And that's so hard to say to us as moms because we feel guilty about every little thing, even on into adulthood with our children, as I'm finding out. So just try to, you know, change what you can from moving forward. And it certainly sounds like she's gotten on the right track because she went ahead and had them evaluated, even though Dad and Grandma and other people were saying, oh, they're boys, oh, they're twins, don't worry about it. She went ahead and did it. I'm glad her pediatrician finally, after the boys turned two, said, gosh, they should be talking a little better by now and didn't completely dismiss it because we know from other callers and just from just reports that we've gotten from other moms that sometimes pediatricians might not even think about that till past this stage. So it's great that she went ahead and got them evaluated. She does say that she's having the speech pathologist see them in the office, and I guess they're not like we are in the United States with home-based services in early intervention, which I think that's really the way to go for babies because then you're seeing them at home with their moms. But even in our country, with all the budgetary issues that many, many states are facing, that could go by the wayside as well, too, since sometimes legislators believe that services can be delivered in a more efficient and a cheaper manner in the clinic. I would disagree with that, but, oh, well, that's kind of the point for another show. But she is having them seen by the speech pathologist, so that's great. She's doing super with that. I have not looked at this other person's website, and I'm going to do that, but I dare to say she's great at her job because the mom says that, but she may work, this person may not exclusively work with babies like we do. And so I do think there's some, let's see, danger is not the right word. There's some, I guess it would be easier for a person who worked with older older children to try to use sometimes techniques that may be better saved for our little friends who are in kindergarten and grade school rather than with babies, because I don't think we should use a ton of really flashcards or those kinds of things that are so focus on pre-academic stuff, and really most of the intervention that moms should be doing at home every day should be in play and with their daily routines, and save those things that look more like school things for when they're older than two. And I know you agree with that as well, Kate.
Absolutely. Yep. Although it does sound like maybe they're picking up a few, you know, the early interest in numbers, and she's obviously read some
right.
website about that. I never love to see that, really, even though there are parents who are, like, thinking it's brilliant. And, I mean, there's certainly some merit to knowing numbers. But, yeah, to me it just seems, what would be the word? Illogical that you would teach verbs by showing pictures of actions.
Yeah.
You really, like, make a lot more sense to actually do the actions yourself, or use some
right.
interesting character to act out the action, and then, you know, they get what walk means and sit means and fall down means because you're using them
right.
in context and not with a picture. I think lots of parents and sometimes professionals assume that kids get pictures the way that adults get pictures, and I
right.
think a lot of kids don't really get pictures all that well. So,
you know, and as speech pathologists, so many of our tests and so many of the methods that we were trained with in school really focused on that. And, you know, I talk all the time in these opportunities that I get to in the conferences that I'm doing to so many of the things that we learned in grad school really aren't even applicable for our population that we're working with birth to three. And I always will say, how many of you actually worked with babies in grad school? How many of you actually did the kinds of, you know, saw the kinds of kids that you see now? There may be one hand in a room of, you know, 30 to 50 women, and sometimes men, but, you know, we didn't get tons of experience with babies there, and so usually people kind of do what they know, and so if they had worked with older children with pictures and older children with more structured, we're going to sit at the table and do this, they might really think that that's the way to do therapy. And I think sometimes parents think that too, and I had a woman who was so funny about that on Monday, or well, I guess it was Tuesday when I was in Springfield last week, and she was laughing, and she said, I think sometimes moms expect me to come in and just therapize their children. And I
yeah.
thought that was a really interesting verb. She said, because they think we're going to come in, and it's going to be totally academic and
mm-hmm.
totally you sit here and do what I tell you to do and move your mouth this way, and then by the end of the hour you're talking. And it doesn't work that way. And so she said she gave an interesting story. She was saying that she was the replacement speech pathologist, and I kind of laughed about that since that's has been my role for a long time. And she said she came in, and all the other therapists had been working with this one particular child in the bedroom because he was really, really active. And if you didn't work with him in the bedroom, he was just all over the house. And so they had done that, but consequently in doing that, mom never participated. So she really wanted the model where the therapist just kind of took the kid and did their own thing, and she never knew what happened, and she said she didn't really ask questions or anything. It was just kind of like a, you know, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, visit. And she was really uncomfortable with that, and she said it was hard for her to kind of bite the bullet and say to mom, listen, you need to really be doing all these things with him every day, and how are you going to do that if you don't see it? And I think that's what happens sometimes when moms take kids to clinics, because
mm-hmm.
it is really like a medical appointment or like the dentist. And you send the children back, and you get their stuff done, and then you take them home, and you're done until the next time you go back. And really, therapy should not look that way for our little friends birth to three. And again, if you're a therapist who's not been used to that kind of model where you're really involving parents and talking with the parents and giving them good advice and showing them how to work with their children, it's a little harder to implement. It does sound like this therapist, though, did you know, at least give her some materials, even though, you know, that probably wouldn't have been my first choice. But I think it helps moms so much if they can actually see the therapy, because they'll know what works and what doesn't work, and then they're able to carry that over at home.
Right. So we would say, we don't love the flashcard approach. I think it would be much
more demonstrate
peaceful.
Those verbs.
Right.
Yeah, like you were saying, if you're working on verbs, do the action. And even sometimes, Ben, that feels a little forced to parents. And so you could have, if you're playing with the farm, you could make the animals do those things, make them run, make them hide, make them jump, make them kiss, make them sleep, make them eat, make them swim in the water, make them take a bath, you can say wash. All those great verbs that mom's probably looking at. With pictures, she could probably do that and be so much more fun and play with those
and
little
I think
boys
that
doing
kids,
those things.
When kids are really engaged in a happy sort of a way, that just as adults, just as all humans, I mean, that's when we absorb the most. That's when we take, you know, we sponge it up and we've got it, as opposed to kind of a drill approach where, you know, the baby's swing. It's so much more fun to wee! As you swing, and the kids are excited about it. So that would be one thing. And it sounds like, you know, it may be the clinic thing where they do, she may not even be, I think most clinics here, I'm not that knowledgeable about them, but I hear parents say it's kind of common to have that approach where they take them back and then they bring them out, you know, and then a minute exchange with the therapist and they say, see you next Tuesday. And that's kind of the formula for it, which is very different from sitting there and being part of the session.
Right, it totally is. And I'm not saying that children don't get better in that way, and goodness knows some therapy like that would be better than no professional intervention at all. However, even if moms are listening and are in this kind of clinical situation in the United States, just say, I want to participate. I want to go back there with you. When I ran a group program, which I did for a couple of years here in Louisville, I had some DIs work with me, and we saw children and did not necessarily have all the moms for all 6 or 9 of the children per session stay in the room, because that would have been a different issue and a different problem in and of itself. But we had closed circuit TV so that they could watch what was happening. Many clinics have that two-way glass so that you can sit and see what's going on with your child, and again, see what works and what doesn't work and figure out how you can implement those things at home. And the very best thing, again, if your therapist is not going to let you be in there every session, say, can we use our next session where I'm just in here with you guys, or can we just take this next session to really talk about the kinds of things that I can do at home? Because, again, if parents aren't seeing what their children are working on in therapy, it does become a little bit like a medical appointment where you get your procedure and then you go home, and, again, you don't think about it, you don't do the things that we know. From working with children and from all the research tells us that the kids who do better in therapy are the ones whose parents are really committed and really involved and really following through. So that's something that I would encourage her to do too. She said they love animals, so boy, would I use animals in therapy. Wouldn't you, Kate? Wouldn't you do everything with their... Yeah. She says almost to the point of obsession. Great. You've got what motivates them. And so use that. Use that to work on all of your language goals and your language targets. She did say that they're starting to do some two-word phrases, so that's super. So we know that they're moving on toward that 24-month level or 24-month language level if they're saying some of those spontaneously. So that's super. She said they love nursery rhymes and go around the house singing. That's perfect. You really want to encourage that and make that really social and make that a really fun part of your interaction with them, and use lots of songs to, again, work on that interactive piece, and then also language. You can do tons of stuff with little songs with learning what those words mean and kind of acting those out and doing the hand motions. That's tons of fun for toddlers. Let's see, what else did she say that we wanted to address? She said their receptive skills seem reasonable to me, and I would just really caution mom to know that receptive language drives expressive language. And until a child understands words, he's not going to be able to say those words. So she should really focus just as much on those receptive skills and on making sure that they understand those words and those verbs, have them act those little things out with their animals in play or whatever toys you're using, or make sure that they're really starting to follow directions very, very consistently. They did have right around that five-month delay, just according to the test scores. So, again, that's an issue, and I try so hard to really talk to moms about how important that piece is and not just dismiss, well, they understand fine to me, or they seem to get most of what we talk about and do. And I would dare say that in this house, because there are three children, they probably do lots of things according to a schedule or according to a routine. So some of the things that the twins are understanding may be just because they do the same things every single day, not necessarily processing and understanding mom's words. So I would really talk with her about incorporating lots of different and lots of new kinds of directions into their daily routines and new opportunities to demonstrate that they're understanding language in those routines as well.
Right. I mean, we see a lot of times that that sometimes is the more difficult thing for a parent, and we're talking in generalities here because we don't know these kids and we don't know this mom, but
right.
It can be most difficult to kind of talk to parents about that and to get parents to come around to realize, yeah, maybe, you know, and I get that. I mean, I would choose that as the thing to be skeptical about, probably, if I were on the other end. It's just that because, like you said, a lot of times kids follow quote-unquote directions or understand that things that they hear every day on a consistent basis, but they aren't necessarily picking up language the way that typically developing kids do. Is, you know,
right.
At that age is very much like a sponge. They really aren't supposed to have to hear it many times before they internalize it and understand it and poof, turn around and use it not too long after that. And some kids get the big stuff that they hear over and over and over and over. They can go put the garbage in the trash because they've been asked to do it 500 times. But
right.
When you venture out a little beyond that, you get the stare that says, I don't really know what you're talking about, you know.
Right.
So I think you're definitely on the right track to say, make sure, keep on that. Don't let that one, you know, don't get so fixated on talk, talk, talk that forget she forgets that they have to know what they're talking about.
Exactly. The other thing she talked about was that they were bilingual and that she's decided to focus on English alone right now. And I think that's a good idea because of the receptive language delay. If you have a child who lives in a bilingual home and they're not talking very much, we don't worry about that as much if the mom says yes. He or she, you know, is able to follow commands in both languages and seems to understand every little thing. And so we know these boys have had some difficulty with that, hence their receptive language delays. So she, I think, did the right thing by thinking we're going to concentrate on one part of this now and seeing if we can bump this up. And then she can always go back and layer that other language on after they're doing a little bit better with one language to understand. So I think she's on the right track there too. Her biggest thing that she wants us to talk about, and we better start talking about it since we're halfway through the show, is how hard it is to work with two at a time. And oh boy, don't we drive ourselves crazy coming up with ways to do that, Kate.
And be hard, especially when they are, well, it sounds like one may have a little bit bigger delay than the other, but, you know, they're the same age, they're siblings. I'm sure there's some sibling issue between them, just as there is between all children, all siblings. So she really would have her hands full trying to, you know, and what she says is what I see with, you know, my own practice happens a lot. It typically is the child who's a little bit further behind, or in my case, when I go to see a child at a daycare and I stay in the classroom, frequently it's the child I'm there to see who wanders off, you know, and I'm
right.
Now I have the luxury of chasing after because I'm really there to see that specific child. But, you know, it is, there's definitely a correlation between how delayed a child is and how easy they are to engage. And so
right.
It doesn't surprise me at all that she says, well, it's frequently the one who's a little further behind that I lose. And that's not easy.
That's not easy. And what my advice to her would be, and this is what I do when I'm working with a set of twins like this or a set of triplets like this, I really try to think, okay, we're only going to go as fast as the one who's farthest behind can tolerate. And usually that's what happens is that you're moving a little bit too fast or there's too much going on. And so the one who's struggling the most tends to kind of wander away. And so I think in that situation, I would try to direct most of my attention toward keeping him engaged and keeping him with you. And the other child, because he's even a teeny bit ahead, probably is further along in knowing how to initiate and even how to hold mom's attention and do that a little better. And the other one that's farther behind doesn't quite know how to do that yet. So I would really direct lots of your attention and your efforts, for lack of a better word, toward keeping him with you and see if that doesn't result in both of them staying there, because the other one who's just a tiny bit farther along developmentally may have the staying power then to do it when you're not focused on him quite as much as you would be the one who you seem to lose. So that's what I try to do. When I have a child who tends to want to walk away from me, I always try to keep him in really close proximity to me too. So if we're sitting playing with something on the floor, I try to hold him on my lap or hold him right in front of me. And if he seems to want to wander off, the first time I sort of feel that, I put my hand on his leg or hold his hand or put my arm around him or do something, again, that kind of brings him back closer to me and makes him want to stay with me, even if that's just, Donna, I'm going to sit here and love on you and get that physical connection. Because if he feels kind of, again, that reason to stay or even that deterrent with I'm not going to get up and walk away, if he does tend to go to the other room, take the other child and follow him. Track him down, hunt him down, stay with him so that he can hang in there with you, because the more he's with you, the more opportunities he has to learn from you. So I would be really persistent in keeping the other one's attention, because chances are the one who you're not struggling to keep his attention, he's going to stay anyway, and he's going to want to follow you anyway. And that seems to work for me when I'm working with twins and when one seems to kind of want to go his own way. Do you have some other ideas for that, Kate?
Well, I would say one thing that I, you know, when I come up against this, whether it's just one child I'm working with or a daycare setting or the child has a sibling, I do kind of look at the environment just as a whole, like what's the situation here, and it does seem like kids who are a little delayed and have some trouble engaging, and I have trouble holding their attention. If I switch up the environment, and generally that means kind of build in that a more confined space, and I don't mean lock them in the high chair. I just mean if she's one of those people who has this nice open floor plan, and it almost encourages the wandering. It almost encourages distractedness. Take them in the basement. Take them in your bedroom. You kind of sit on the outside and have them sit both on the inside kind of against the wall. Now, I don't ever force a child to stay, but little things like you talked about, that coupled with the environment, really can, I mean, you can go from having a all I did was chase him session or, gee, it felt like I had to keep up with him a lot this hour, to he sat with me almost the whole time and was really, really attentive and interested just by changing. And I seem to have the biggest issues in those really open houses where there really aren't a lot of doors and they just can go around and around. Get out of that and go into a more confined, more restricted, and the benefit of like a bedroom or something like that is generally it's not going to have a bunch of toys. It's not going to have a bunch of things that the child's naturally interested in. So she has a more captive audience just based on where she is. And Laura, I know you said that this mom ordered DVDs, so she'll be seeing this firsthand. But, I mean, I think in general your approach to therapy is to kind of, and I try and implement the same approach because, hey, it works, to kind of, you know, really hold control over what it is kids are playing with. And by that,
right.
You're going to have it in a Ziploc bag. You're going to get them to request it. You're not going to just hand them the whole bag of cool stuff that they want, because even the most attentive kids in that circumstance are likely to say, okay, bye-bye. You know?
Yeah, I'm checking
yeah,
out now.
This
is mine.
See you later. Yeah, and so we definitely control and limit and restrict, you know, what they have access to, and we do that, you know, kind of over course of whatever, however long we're playing with the specific toy, and we want to encourage them to continue to stay with the toy and to stay with us and to communicate back and forth with us as they do that, and just handing, and she may well be doing that already, but if she isn't, she'll see you do it like a pro in your DVDs, and you think, well, my kids would get mad. And the trick is in the way you do it, and in the way you do it in a playful, fun way, the kids, you know, occasionally will see a child who balks at that or has a meltdown about that, but usually not, because we've implemented the approach where they know we're playing.
Right, and it kind of becomes part of your routine, too, so they expect, oh, this is how we play this. You're going to hold the bag, and then we're going to open it together, and then we get the things out, and we play with them together, and if we're doing a puzzle, we don't have all 10 pieces spread out. It's one piece at a time, and we put it in, and then we ask for the next piece. So she'll get to see some examples like that. The other thing she needs to make sure she's doing is just keeping the really high, playful, high-energy, playful approach so that the kids want to stay with her, and both of those. And, again, she'll get to see some of that on the DVD, and it's almost easier to see that than to hear us talk about it. And know what we're talking about with that, too. Some therapists, when they're working with babies, don't really go out of their way to be more fun than anything else in the room. And so she'll really get a chance to see that on the DVD, how engaged and how fun she has to be to make herself, again, more interesting so that he's going to want to stay with her. And, again, some children are just wired differently so that they tend to kind of want to isolate and want to be by themselves rather than try to hang in there and stay, especially if they're not understanding everything that's going on, or if that little guy's feeling like, gosh, my brother is getting all this attention. You know, who knows why he's wanting to leave? But she can watch the DVDs and get some ideas from that, too, as far as kind of how to keep a kid with you. Because goodness knows those DVDs do not show the perfect session every single time. Those kids are like real life where they're trying to leave and they're trying to clean up, and they're trying to do things, you know, which would end the activity. And there is kind of an art in learning how to get them to stay with you and stay interested and stay focused and stay fun and keep yourself, again, more interesting than anything else that they would want to do. So I hope that we hear back from her.
I hope she, I mean, I know she's, I'm sure, watched some of the clips, because you can watch, you know, tidbits of various DVDs. But when we talk about this fun, I would just say, we really mean, I mean, it would be great if you could be that 24/7, but we've been mommies too, so we know that that's probably
right.
Possible. But we're talking about particularly when she's implementing, or we're going to have our mommy children therapy time, so that when she's thinking, I'm going to spend 30 minutes down here on the floor with my babies, so that they're getting their money's worth out of that therapy they're getting each week, because really that is the ticket. I mean, it doesn't matter if her therapist is the greatest in the world. What she does every day with those boys is going to make the most difference to the outcome. So it sounds like
exactly.
She obviously gets that. She's looking for answers. She's figuring
right.
it out. She's doing it. But and I just so I'm clear, Laura, do you think that Teach Me to Talk, you know, the first one is, I mean, that to me, from what I recall watching them, is the most basic as far as what do you do when you're playing with isn't with you?
Yeah, it is the most basic, and I think so many times moms can just put those kinds of strategies in, and really everything else kind of falls into place. This mom ordered, I believe she got the three DVD set because they were they have some receptive issues as well. She got everything, so she'll be able to see even how to work on those more structured things like the verbs that we were talking about and like helping them follow two-step commands and do lots of those little fun processing games might be fun for both of them, when they, especially when they get a little older. Right now they're just right over two, but especially if they're between that 2.5 to 3-year-old phase, those might be some fun things to her, for her to implement, and those are on Teach Me to Listen and Obey too. And I think that she, I'm pretty sure that she got all of those, but for any other mom that's listening, Teach Me to Talk, the first DVD, is kind of the most basic thing. And actually, lots of kids and lots of moms will write me and tell me this, just that one shift in making things really, really fun and knowing kind of how to ratchet it up and play and keep them with you really is all it takes for some kids. Because, again, they want to stay with you. They start wanting to learn from you. The moms naturally carry that over into some of their other daily routines, even if it's not 24 hours a day, because, again, I think it would be hard, like you've said, to keep that woohoo kind of thing going all day long. But just to switch and make sure at least part of the day they're getting that one-on-one playtime with mommy. Or just I've been telling moms, and I've been talking about this in the conferences, you know, 20 or 30 minutes in the morning, in the afternoon, and then again in the evening, where they schedule those playtimes. And that's not just my idea. That's based on Dr. Greenspan's work with his whole floor time approach, that moms really have to get down on the floor, and dads, and really interact and really be one-on-one. And, you know, social skills and, again, language happen in the context of play more naturally than they do any other environment, any other daily routine you could do. While we all like to say that we talk to our kids when we feed them and when we change their diapers and when we give them baths, there are other things we do as moms, too. We run our household. We mentally think about what we're going to make for dinner. We think about the grocery store. We think of the 10 things that we didn't do that day, and we're not sometimes 100% checked in like we are when we actually play and forget about all those other things that we need to be doing. So I would encourage her to do that too. And it sounds like she's trying to do that because she says that, you know, she's talking about the problems that have happened when they're working on things. So she, it does sound like she's trying to make sure that she does kind of schedule some time for mommy therapy to happen. So I hope she can continue to do that, and I hope she can get dad involved too. She says, my husband is still in denial mode and he works late anyway, but I hope that when he is home, she is getting him involved in the play. And sometimes, again, showing a dad a clip from the DVD is all it takes, because then he sees it and goes, oh, I can do that. And dads are great at that. Dads are great at knowing how to play and make it fun and keep a kid with them. So,
you know,
she might
get
some help on that front too.
Once they buy into it, they really are, and a lot of times they really kind of already have the foundation for it, but they haven't they haven't really thought to work language into it. I always, in a certain way, talk about daddy play with usually mommies, because that's who's usually there when I'm initially talking to families. But daddy play is great. Kids love it, particularly little boys, but all kids love it. And my theory of daddy play is, you know, they're the ones who throw them, and they're the ones who wrestle with them, and they're the ones who tickle them. And kids love that. What I don't often see dads do is turn around and work words into that, work language comprehension. They work fun into it, and that we definitely believe that is absolutely fundamental. Dads are great at working fun into it, and once they see the DVD, or maybe they're privy to a good therapy session, they see, oh, you really can work language into that. It's just kind of know the formula for how to do that, but they're great fun play.
Yeah, and so she could really talk with him about doing some of that too. And if there are some dads listening or some moms who are thinking, okay, exactly what are they talking about here? If dad is giving a piggyback ride or a horsey ride or even doing something fun like throwing them on the bed 50 times in a row, that's a perfect opportunity for the child to be able to use the signs and words you're working on in speech and therapy. If you're signing more, if you're saying up, if you're, you know, any kind of word or sign that your child would be able to do. That's a perfect opportunity to work those chances to request in, because he's obviously going to be more motivated to participate when dad is being so much fun and doing all that kind of play that he likes. So you'll want to use those little movement games to target whatever words or signs you've been working on in therapy. And again, if this doesn't make sense to lots of you, email me and I'll give you some examples. There's some articles about that on the website. I think it's called Using the Words You Know to Change Your World or something like that. Look in the expressive language section. And then the clips on the website that you mentioned, Kate, with the from my DVDs with using signs, there's some clips there too, not necessarily about movement, but about how to kind of pause and wait and anticipate and require that your child use a sign or a word before you get the next toy or the next snack, or in this case, do the next fun movement activity. So if you need some ideas for that, you can check those out and kind of see those too. All right, I think we talked about all of her questions. I'm going to read back over it really quickly, but I think that we've given her some ideas. I'm going to email you, Dr. Mom, and let you know that we talked about this on the show today in case you're not listening live right now, and who knows what time it is in Australia on the other end of the world, so it might not even be practical for her right now. So I'm going to email her, and I hope that she hears the show and can follow up and let us know how they're doing. Okay, let's do one more quickie kind of question. Let's do this one, Kate. This is from the website that someone just left a comment on October 8th, and they listed their name as Toy. I think that might be an alias. What do you think?
I would love to have that name for me. I might have to use that one.
Toy, yeah, okay. Yeah. She says, hi, my niece is 30 months old and is not saying a word. I must admit she was on a pacifier for a very long time. She sucked it probably all day, every day. She finally got off it back in March of 2010. So, again, she's been off it for 6 or 7 months. She says, the parents took the child to the doctor, which with testing found out the child had fluid in her ears. The parents had the procedure done to remove the fluid early this year, so I guess she got tubes, but she's still not talking. I can tell she totally understands everything that someone is saying to her from her actions. And I would just say, if her receptive language is typical, if she's 2.5 and really is understanding absolutely everything, ears did not really affect her receptive language, and that would be great. And that would tell you again that developmentally, hearing wasn't the issue here. She says she does scream and make some noise gestures when she's upset or wants something. Also, a few months after she was born, she tended to keep her mouth open a lot. It hurts because she can't say what she wants or someone is hurting her. The parents are young adults and don't know what to do. She doesn't appear to have Down syndrome, and I guess the person's saying that because of the open mouth posture. I would like to know possibly what's causing her not to talk and what can be done. From the bottom of my heart, please help me help my niece. Aw, what a sweet little comment there at the end.
Right.
I would say, well, first of all, let's talk about why she might have her mouth open all the time, and I would guess this is going to be related to allergies or chronic respiratory stuff because she had yucky ears, and kids with yucky ears usually are kind of prone to lots of those respiratory things as well. So she may have her mouth open all the time because she's a mouth breather. She can't breathe through her nose, and that is always the number one thing I think about when kids are breathing or when I see kids with that open mouth posture. If, again, they don't have a diagnosis like Down syndrome or some other kind of low muscle tone disorder. And when that happens, kids usually walk late as well, and she did not say a word about her walking late or having any other problems with learning how to do motor action. So I would suspect that she is sick a lot and may not even have, again, may not even be able to breathe with her mouth closed. That was my first take on that, Kate. Did you have a different read on that?
Well, no. I mean, I would agree with you. That's the most common thing. A lot of times those kids are chronically congested. You know, their noses are gooey. Their eyes are wet. You can hear them breathing from across the room. The other one is the low tone thing. Sometimes kids don't really have the respiratory stuff, but they kind of have low tones
in their trunks. They tend to have squishy kind of pot bellies, and then their little face, their little mouth is open, their tongue is kind of loose in there, not necessarily quite as
dramatic
as with the child with Down syndrome, but it is kind of similar. You know, they tend to learn to breathe through their mouths when they do that. I guess usually it's a kind of a mixed bag, but I'd agree.
Yeah.
The first thing is the breathing, and the second thing is the tone. Again, does that account for her not saying a word? No.
No, I don't think so either. And, you know, she does say that she understands everything. And, again, I'm always cautious when a mom or a family member tells me that a child understands everything because we don't, unless I see a child do it or get some, you know, have some evidences of that, I really like to see those kinds of things first before I really believe that a late talker has completely normal receptive language. And, again, that's just because of the job that we do. We've come to expect that so many expressive language delays are really due to some underlying receptive language problems. But, again, we're just going to go with what this person says, and she says she understands lots or everything, so we'll tend to go with that. She does say that the little girl screams and makes some noises and some gestures when she's upset or wants something. And, you know, gestures indicate that she's got communicative intent, that she's trying to communicate. So that's also a plus in her favor. But, you know, 30 months with no words is really, really old not to be talking. I mean, I can see how a family would not be too concerned if a child were turning or about to turn two. And again, from a professional standpoint, I would be concerned about that very same child. But to say that the child is 30 months and not using any words is huge. So I would suggest that the parents get her evaluated as quickly as possible, and if you're in the United States and need some information about your state's early intervention program, you can Google your state name plus the phrase early intervention and be directed to a website that will give you the information about your state program. The evaluations are always free by federal law, and then if she qualifies for services,
she will. I don't know.
She will.
Wouldn't qualify.
Yeah, there's no if. When she qualifies for services, that's something they're going to want to get going right away because tick-tock, she's 2 and a half, no words. If she is understanding everything and has no receptive language problems like her aunt has said, I'm sure she's quite frustrated because to be that old, you start to realize I should be able to do this a little bit better. I should be able to control my world a little bit better.
People probably think we're still thinking that's old, but in our world, when we see kids at 36 months, when we get a child at 30 months who has no words, we're thinking, boy, it's unfortunate we didn't have them a year ago.
Exactly.
Knows
and, you know,
what that
would
look like, you know, had it.
And we know with typically developing language, that children really do start to imitate and say words right at the beginning of their second year or right after they've turned one. And she's a year and a half beyond that. And a year and a half is a long time in the life of a toddler. So I totally agree that it is old. And somebody, again, like you said, with their point of reference is different than ours.
Right.
But 2 and a half is late. 2 and a half is really late not to have any words at all. And it's I hope that this aunt can really talk with the parents about having her evaluated because she needs to see a speech pathologist immediately and get something going on there. And that's not to say that she's not ever going to talk or that this is, you know, going to be a lifelong struggle. Who knows? We can't see her. We don't know what the issues are. But it does appear to be a situation where she needs a professional evaluation, and it doesn't seem like it's probably going to resolve on its own. We know that she had yucky ears because she had had tubes put in, but in my professional opinion, that does not account for the extent of her delay. Because if her receptive language is normal, we know that she, on some level, language has made sense to her, and so it's not all about that. So the parents really, really want to get on that immediately.
Right.
I would say this. If I were seeing this child, I would definitely be talking to the parents and to the aunt, whomever I might be with, saying, simplify your language, use fewer words, and use them more often, and let's introduce some simple signs right now. Because this kid sounds
absolutely
like he has the foundational skills to be signing, because she's
right.
using natural gestures to communicate, just because she's figured out if I point, Mom, you'll move a little faster. If I, you know, do the come here sign or the gimme hands, I get what I want. I mean, she's figured those kind of common sense everyday things out, and she's using them. I suspect she waves. I suspect she points. And those are great, and that tells us, okay, she gets the whole gesture thing. She knows those things help her get her needs met and communicate her wants and needs. So, you know, introduce more, introduce eat, introduce all done, introduce go. I usually start with four or five. Introduce please. Give her some words. And then when parents and she and the parents use those signs, she's going to be hearing those words in isolation over and over and over, and she is much more likely to turn around and say, more, you know. Once
and be able to pop
time,
it out, yeah.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
usually not too long before they're using those words.
Right, and if you need some direction for that, you can look on my website at teachmetotalk.com and look in the sign language section, and in that category, one of the first articles that I wrote about that has links to an American Sign Language site, and you can type in a word that you just come up with on your own on that site, and the sign pops up, or all the first common signs, 30, 40, 50 common signs that we teach children at the beginning of speech therapy that correlate with the signs that they need for their everyday lives are on there, and you can click on that and see a person sign that. And again, watch the clips from the DVDs that are on the website, or better yet, get those, get Teach Me to Talk, and start putting some of those really basic strategies into your day with her. And even an aunt can do this. Grandmothers order the DVDs all the time, Kate, and then email me back and say, I've done these. Yeah, I've done these with my grandchild. My daughter doesn't even know that I've done this, but I've done these, and this stuff works. And so even a concerned aunt could do that and start to make a real difference in this little girl's life. But I do hope the parents will follow through with some professional evaluation.
Oh, absolutely.
Because, again,
but, you know, there's downsides. Make the call, get on their schedule, get it booked, get the evaluation. But even in the most organized progressive states, that takes a little while. And in this girl's situation, time is of the essence, and they can start some of that stuff tomorrow, today, whatever, you know, immediately. And so, you know, maybe by the time she gets evaluated, she'll have a couple words. She'll have a handful of signs. And you know, that in and of itself frequently helps with the frustration, because at least they can say mine or more or up or, you know, drink or something. They can at least have some control. And it's kind of universal that two-year-olds in general really want some control. That's just kind of normal human development, you know. So that's just the way we're wired. And when they get a little control, generally their dispositions improve a fair amount, because they feel like things are working in their way, in their, you know, behalf or benefit or direction, and it makes us all happy to get what we want now and again.
Absolutely, and they also become more motivated to try, because when they realize, gosh, these signs, these words give me power, and so I want to use that and wield that and really boss my mommy and daddy around and tell them what it's going to take to make me a little happier. And so, again, they try harder because they're more motivated, because they see results from that. I did want to add that she talked at the beginning about being on a pacifier for a very long time. Really, pacifiers in and of themselves don't cause children not to talk, because we see tons of children who have it in their mouth, pop it out to talk, and then pop it back in their mouth. So while you may not want, well, you really don't want a pacifier in a child's mouth 24/7, at the same time, I do not believe pacifiers are the reason that children don't talk. So I'm glad she's off it, so that's great, but don't, if you're a mom, get fooled in to or guilted into thinking that it's your fault because you let the child have the passy too long. Usually that's not the reason in and of itself, so I wanted to mention that too. I think we're at the end of our hour, so thanks for joining us for the show, and I hope you'll join us back here next week, 6 o'clock Eastern Time on Sunday.
And I even remembered today. Woohoo!
That was good. Okay, talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.